Fellow freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael here with this Faith and Freedom Show. I call it Preservative Talk Radio. You can find out more at preservativetalkradio.com. Today I'm talking about the U.S. Supreme Court and their decision on the Affordable Health Care Act. Before I went to the break, I was talking about whether or not, what is the purpose of government? What is the purpose of quote unquote here? Let's see what they call it, health care. In the olden days, I would say medical care, a doctor care, where you get the services of a physician, somebody who's trained in physiology and chemistry and the reactions and actions of the body, studying creation to determine how it reacts with itself. There may be things that can be identified by men if they understand the functions of the created order, that they can solve some problems. They can detect problems. They can detect things chemically. They could examine things. If they can look at the bones and the organs and see what they're doing, that there's fixes. Without having divine intervention, supernatural assistance, it could be there's some things that have a natural fix, something that we can do, you know, with our own hands. That's what I would call medical care. I'm not sure whether health care, according to this Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, I may be a skeptic, and I don't know. But one of the things I do try to do is look at things critically. Sometimes when I see a title on a bill, sometimes I think that the meaning is exactly the opposite of what it refers to. There's popular bills these days, popular acts, the Patriot Act, the Privacy Act, the Bank Secrecy Act. There's different kind of acts. The Patient Protection Affordable Care Act of 2010. That's what we're going to be examining. And Chief Justice John Roberts says it's the individual mandate which requires individuals to purchase a health insurance policy providing a minimum level of coverage, and the Medicaid expansion, which gives funds to the states on the condition that they provide specified health care to all citizens, there's a key point, whose income falls below a certain threshold. Does the bill actually refer this to being a provision that will provide for citizens? And citizens of what? These things, and you think, what is he talking about? No, there are details with regard to these things. A word like citizen has a meaning in law, and there's certain facts that would be touching on it that may or may not apply to different people in America. The bill itself said it was for all Americans. Here, the United States said citizens. You can be an American and not be a citizen for many reasons. Chief Justice Roberts says, we do not consider whether the act embodies sound policies. There's going to be times, if you read through this, where they're having to distinguish of whether they are judging something on its political merits or whether it's considering law. I'm a little bit confused by the judgment that I read, the first 66 pages that I've been through so far out of the 194 pages in this decision. In the law books, I'm sure it probably covers more pages because the pages are smaller than what I'm looking at my computer screen. I'm a little bit concerned at what they do here, and that's why we're walking through this. There was a point where they said, well, we want to just stick with the law, say what the law is. We're not worried about policy. And so we're going to look at it and see what the law says. And then they scrutinize the words and say, well, because the words say this, we're going to ignore the government's claim I'll get more specific as we go. They say, because the words say this, we're going to act this way. And then in the same ruling, they say, well, if we actually paid attention to the words, this thing would be unconstitutional. So what we're going to do is we're going to ignore the words and, in my words, I say, make believe that it says something else. Because if it said this other thing a certain way, then it would be constitutional. you need to choose one thing or the other, or else you're acting outside your authority, and what you're going to get is catastrophe. That's something to think about. So Chief Justice Roberts said they're not going to consider whether this act embodies sound policies. The judgment is entrusted to the nation's elected leaders. We ask only whether Congress has the power under the Constitution to enact the challenged provisions. Well, that's very good. That's staying within the bounds of the authority structure. Whether Congress has a power under the Constitution to enact the challenged provision. And of course, they wouldn't be reviewing it unless somebody challenged it. It'd be none of their business. But they brought it before the court. So the court will say whether or not the question is whether or not Congress has the power delegated to them in the U.S. Constitution to actually enact what they've enacted. In this case, we must begin again, or we must again determine whether the Constitution grants Congress powers it now asserts, but which many states and individuals believe it does not possess. There's a lot of people joined in the suit. Resolving this controversy requires us to examine both the limits of the government's power and our own limited role in policing those boundaries. Now, that's a very good, healthy thing. They're examining their authority. By what authority do we have to even look at the issue? If we don't have authority to look at it, we won't. Marbury versus Madison, there was a few, let's say they call it dictum statements, where the court kind of made some quips about laws that are outside the bounds of the Constitution or being void. I don't think, as I look back on the Marbury versus Madison, that they were saying a certain thing that Congress did or what the President James Madison or Secretary of State James Madison was doing. I don't think they actually said whether their actions were against the Constitution. So I think people take Marbury versus Madison wrong. As I read Marbury versus Madison, what the court did is said, nowhere in the Constitution have we seen anything here that actually gives us jurisdiction to get involved in this controversy. So they made some comments about whether something was constitutional or not, but it was literally what you would call dictum, which means it's kind of outside the discussion. The only thing I really remember him saying was, Congress, you're suing Mr. Madison, the Secretary of State, and you're suing him in our court. The problem is, we can't listen to anything that anybody says, whether it's Mr. Madison or you, if in the Constitution we haven't been expressly given the power to listen to your particular suit, your particular issue of law. And there is a provision in the Constitution where Congress can create things that say, okay, this wasn't written in the Constitution for expressly for you to do, Supreme Court, but we are going to create a lower court that has jurisdiction over this issue, and we're going to make sure that we put in there that the U.S. Supreme Court has appellate authority. They never did that. They actually never created a function of government consistent with the U.S. Constitution that would allow them to sue the Secretary of State over the particular thing, where the Secretary of State would not appoint a judge that Congress had determined ought to be promoted. So it was in the power of the executive branch to actually do what Congress asked. And so they didn't do it. They refused to do it. And so Congress sued the Secretary of State in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, I see nowhere where we've been given permission to entertain the topic. But yet, instead of just dismissing it for lack of jurisdiction, it became a very famous case where most people think and look at, oh, look, the Supreme Court can declare something unconstitutional. So I think it's been a little bit twisted. It's because of a lack of knowledge that we really don't understand the fundamentals of these things that really control law and government in our lives. And so because of that, because we're not educated in it, we don't spend the time to really look at things critically, our whole nation, our whole system is going to Hades in a handbasket. So getting back to this Chief Justice John Roberts commentaries as he approaches this ruling on the determination of whether or not the Patient Affordable Health Care Act is constitutional. In this case, he goes through a bunch of constitutional things. He says, our cases refer this Oh, let me back this up a bit. This is something I see often with courts saying this, saying, well, hey, they can, government can do whatever they want to do, is sort of how people take this. He was talking about the limitations on the federal government and powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states respectively. He's referring to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. The same does not apply to the states because the Constitution is not the source of their power. The Constitution may restrict state governments, as it does, for example, by forbidding them to deny any person the equal protection of the laws. But where such prohibitions do not apply, state governments do not need constitutional authorization to act. Hold that thought. They don't need U.S. constitutional authorization to act. But depending on the state or commonwealth, the one of the several states, depending on their own makeup of their own government, there are states that must have in their own constitution authority to do a certain thing before they can do it. Virginia is one of those. But where such prohibitions do not apply, state governments do not need constitutional authorization, of course, unless their own constitution requires it. The states thus can do and perform many of the vital functions of modern government. Punishing street crime. What about hate crimes? That's a federal crime. That's something. So you see how we're starting to act beyond the authority? Now you might say, oh, the hate crime thing is very important. If you don't have authority to do it, there's something criminal about the whole regulation scheme. Running public schools. That's not in the federal authority. Notice they say the states can do and perform many of the vital functions of modern government. It's not a function of the federal government to run your public school, to punish your street crime, zoning your property for development. And that's just to name a few, according to the U.S. Supreme Court here in this decision. Our cases refer to this general power of governing possessed by the states, but not by the federal government, as the police power. Police power. Well, and that again takes a long conversation that we can do an entire radio show on, the discussion of police power. The court went on in this ruling on the Patient Affordable Health Care Act, citing a very important case with regard to states' rights, federal rights, and the boundaries and separation of powers between them. It's New York versus United States, a 1992 case. He quoted the previous court saying, state sovereignty is not just an end in itself. Rather, federalism secures to citizens the liberties that derive from the diffusion of sovereign power. I love the quote there. The problem is they quote the stuff in the beginning as if they're complying with it. That quote basically admits that one of the important aspects of the state is to protect mankind, individual men and women, from the intrusions of a United States government. We call it the federal government, the United States government, imposing itself with the power of the sword on your life outside the boundaries of their jurisdiction, outside the boundaries of their authority. Now you say, am I anti-government? I am so pro-government that we are having this conversation. How else are we going to preserve our society unless we actually make our government, we call it our government, a government of the people, where the people are responsible to hold it in check, are responsible for wrongs it does, and get the blessings of the right that it does? How else are we going to continue in a society that's free and right and a right influence on the world for good? How else are we going to do it unless we carefully examine and re-examine and retrain ourselves to these fundamental principles? Those who founded the nation actually called for every man and woman to revisit these fundamental principles for the sake of their neighbor. They would sacrifice their own convenience to revisit these principles so that you would be a minister of God for the good of your neighbor. David Allen Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio. Find out more. Go to preservativetalkradio.com. We're going to be back after these messages.